Gibson Reel 6. The capitulation came and you had to, in effect, say, what happened to you? And how did what happened to you once you got the order? Obviously, you stopped firing. You had the Japanese tanks coming down the road. Yes. What happened then?
Well, we watched these Japanese tanks come down the road and then all their soldiers marching down. We thought, what a shower they looked there. Terrible uniform. Of course, they were jungle fighters, you see. They spent their time in the jungle. And we were told that they were all so tiny and all wore glasses, and we were amazed to see quite a number of six-footers among them. They marched past us, and of course, we hadn't had time to destroy our guns. But I took the firing pin out, and when no one was looking, I flung it into the canal so that it wouldn't be able to be retrieved. Then the order came that we all had to walk to Changi, which was a few miles away. And it was a sorry sight. Thousands of us walking along this route to Changi. And on the way we would see bodies, cows that were bloated up, that had been killed. People sitting by the roadside had lost their homes.
And your own feelings in that moment?
Oh, well, it was desperation.
So you wouldn't know what was going to happen to you?
No.
At this time, you didn't know the Japanese would be as harsh as they turned out to be?
No, we had no idea, you see. The Japanese mustn't have met many people with ginger hair. And some of them were coming up to me and wanting to cut a bit of my hair off, you see, and put it down little pouches. So they didn't know much about us and we didn't know much about them.
Did they appear reasonably friendly at this point in time?
Yes.
They weren't kind of knocking you around with rifle butts or anything like that?
No. I think probably they were just as pleased their fighting was finished, and the cruelty would come later.
What happened to you then?
We reached Singapore and we went into proper army barracks, which we call Roberts Barracks. But there wasn't any room for us inside, and so we slept on the pavement outside for a while. Then there wasn't any room. They brought all the wounded from Singapore and put them in the barracks. And we had to sleep outside underneath some coconut palm trees.
Did they feed you?
Feed? Well, we got rice. And that was about all. And the rice they gave us had been treated in warehouses, I think, and had been mixed with lime. And when we boiled it, it turned yellow and tasted terrible.
And drinking water, were you all right?
Well, we had to go and get our own drinking water. And, of course, the wounded had to be looked after. And one of the jobs I hated, all the soiled linen, the sheets that were covered with blood, we had to take them to the sea and try to wash them. And you can't get blood out in salt water. And we used to have to thump and thump and thump to try to get these sheets cleaned of the blood.
Did they? Were they attempting to treat the wounded?
Our own medical people were treating the wounded.
Was there any attempt to get you organised by your own senior people?
Our own senior people did, yes. Of course, you know what happened just before the capitulation, talking about the wounded. There was a hospital, and some of their troops went into the hospital and bayoneted doctors and patients.
Incredible. Well, you were sleeping outside, but you wounded that are filling the barracks inside, and presumably the medical staff were doing the best they could.
Yes.
I suppose medical supplies would be short.
Yes.
Food, again, was...
It was terrible.
Were you getting, at this point in time, an inclination as to how you were going to be treated?
I think so, yes. and our bodies were changing. We didn't need to go to the toilet for about a fortnight because of the food we were getting, except that you made water more frequently. The rice just turned to water.
Were they showing that arrogance?
Well, we didn't see much of them when we were in Changi. I mean, so many of us were concentrated on Changi, and they were just on the periphery. It wasn't until we went down to Singapore on Good Friday. We marched down.
How long had you been in Changi then?
Not very long. April the 3rd, we marched down. So from the 16th of February to April the 3rd, we were in Changi.
That's a good 6 weeks, isn't it?
February, March, April, yes.
And by then, after 6 weeks of just this treatment, you mustn't have been in good condition.
No.
Was there any attempt, to escape? I mean, obviously, there was nowhere to escape to, really, but was there any attempts?
Not then. No. I think at Changi, units were trying to regroup. In fact, we did get our regiment together. And there was a friend of mine called McDowell, who hailed from Ashington. He died of his wounds in Roberts Barracks, and our whole regiment marched with him to his funeral. That was the last time we ever had the regiment together.
So in a sense, you were in Changi, and you were later just dumped in there, and the guards were obviously, the chaps were in a situation around the camp, so you couldn't get out, but you were looking after yourselves very largely.
Yes.
Except they delivered the rice and what have you to you. And was Colonel Dean still with you then?
Colonel Dean was still with us, yes.
And you reorganised the unit? And
yes.
Did you have some form of parade on the morning to see that you were there and tell you whatever they could tell you? I think in terms of Colonel Dean. And
yes, we still tried to organise ourselves. And we were sleeping underneath the palm trees. Of course, Singapore gets a lot of heavy showers. So we were getting soaked, probably during the day, probably at night. And even after the showers, the palms would sway in the breeze and you would get another shower. I managed to make myself a little shack using bamboo. And I went up the palm trees and pulled the dead leaves off. And at one time I pulled a nest of red ants on top of myself. But I got these dead palms, put them over the bamboo framework so that I wasn't wet during the night. But by then, Major Wiley, who in civil life was a minister of religion, Major Wiley found a hut he said would be useful to us, but it was a few hundred yards away, outside of our boundary. And it was a bamboo hut with atap roof. So he reckoned that if enough of our regiment got inside there and lifted, we could lift it out of its foundations and carry it, which was all very well. We all managed, probably 100 of us inside, managed to lift this hut, and on his command we started to walk, left, right, with his huge hut. Of course, it was all right on the level, but we had to cross where there was a little stream, and as we went down, the hut bent in the middle. And then it all came crashing down on top of us. It was a sight to see men with their heads poked out of the roof. But we were trying to organise ourselves.
Before we move on, can you describe the Changi layout and get a picture of the buildings and yourselves?
not very well, because there was Roberts Barracks, which was a proper barracks built for the troops, for peacetime, you see, with a huge square in the middle. And they were well-built barracks, you know, concrete, and with big verandas round, tall, airy.
And the British troops were on the parade ground wherever you could get. And the Japanese, as you said, were outside that.
British and Australian, yes. But many of the Sikhs had gone over to the Japs. And in fact, we started to see some of the Sikhs being on guard duty.
This was the Indian National Army that came about.
Yes.
Well, that would make you feel a bit of contempt, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes.
Australians, did you mix with them?
Oh, yes. Made some good friends. Still write to some of the Australians.
I wouldn't think that they would take to it very well, being the kind of personalities they have and characters.
No.
So after, in April, I think you said, you then moved out of Shandi.
April the 3rd, Good Friday, we marched down to Singapore.
How far would that be?
Probably about, I don't know, 8 to 10 miles, I think.
In your condition after the weeks that you've been...
And the heat of the day, yes.
It must have been pretty hard march. Mm-hmm. And physically, how were you at this time?
Pretty weak. You had your breakfast and half an hour later your stomach was empty and grumbling.
And there was still rice that they were giving you?
They weren't
giving you anything additional?
Very, very little else. Which was put into a sort of, boiled into a sort of stew to help you to get the rice down.
And the march you said down into Singapore, where were they taking you?
To a camp called River Valley Camp, which was by the side of a stinking canal. It was all green moss and smelling. And it was more or less built near a swamp, because at night time there were so many bullfrogs. When the rain started, the noise of the bullfrogs was unbearable at times.
Was this a permanent camp?
This camp had been built for native labourers to sleep in while they were working. Of course, they left all their bugs and their lice behind.
Were you sleeping on beds?
No, it was bamboo slats. You slept on bamboos. The huts were of bamboo with atap roofs.
How many men to a hut?
About 60 to a hut.
How many would they normally hold, is this?
Well, I don't know.
Pretty crowded, then.
We were pretty crowded, head to tail. It was two tiers, you see. There was upstairs and downstairs. And you climbed up as best as you could if you were on the upstairs.
And the amenities, the latrines?
There were trenches dug in the ground. And for washing, there was a row of standpipes high up so that you could stand underneath and be showered. And of course, where did they have them? Just across the road, where there was a row of houses filled with the Chinese ladies and their children, so that when you were having when we were all having showers, you were in full view of the people across the road and people walking up and down the road.
And you could at least keep clean to a degree, then, presumably.
Yes.
In relation to the huts, what was the? How did they protect? How did they guard you? Sorry, not protect. How did they guard you?
A big barbed wire fence right round. And a monsoon ditch.
And did they come into the camp? Did they have guards in the camp itself?
Yes, yeah. The Japanese came into the camp, yes.
Were you still able to stick together as a unit?
Well, as I said, McDowell's funeral was the last time we were all together, because when we marched down to Singapore, there was only one group under Major Brodie. The colonel and quite a lot of the regiment were left behind. So we only had part of the regiment at River Valley.
And were you able to stick together in River Valley?
Oh, yes, we stuck together in River Valley, yes.
Can you take me through a typical day's routine in the camp, starting from, you know, Rivali getting up?
Well, Rivali getting up, you'd have your rice and your jippo and a cup of tea.
What was jippo?
Jippo was boiled water with anything that could be added to it.
Which might be?
Pumpkins, a few pumpkins, a few melons, a few peas, anything that could be had was put in that. But, sorry, breakfast, we only had the rice and a cup of tea, right? And then we went on parade. And I can remember our group, we had a corporal called Musami, and then a private called Saito and another little chap, and they took charge of our group of about 30 men, and they would have tenko. We would have to number Ichini Sangshi Goroku Sujiachi Ku number, and when he was satisfied we were all there, then he would march us to the barrows, and then three men to a barrow with picks and shovels aboard, we would march into Singapore, where we would start tidying up all the bomb damage. Digging holes, filling holes in, digging away rubbish, etc. And then we would take out some containers with us which would have rice and the jippo and the tea. Tea, no milk or sugar in the tea, you know. Mind you, doing that was interesting for me because it gave me an eye-opener. I could have a look at Singapore and see the people, see how they lived, see the standpipes by the roadside where whole families would come, the ladies with their children, and they would wash all their clothes and change all their clothes and put fresh ones on just underneath that standpipe. Probably a Chinese woman with about five or six children would do that. Then an Indian woman would come with her children. We could see the street sellers. A Chinese lady with a bamboo pole, and on either end of the bamboo pole, she would have a fire going on one end, and on the other end she would have all the ingredients for making a meal, and she would put that off her shoulders, squat down by the roadside and cook a meal for somebody and then put it back on her shoulders and be off again.
I presume they wouldn't be able to talk to you or come near you.
Weren't supposed to, but when the Japs weren't looking, we had conversation and sometimes had business with them.
Of a sexual nature?
No. Buying stuff from them. You could get strips of melon, and on a hot day when you were thirsty, a strip of melon, if you could get that for a few cents when the Japs weren't looking, that was was terrific.
Were you being paid whilst you were
doing? Yes, we got I think it was 10 cents a day for working, 5 or 10 cents a day while we were in Singapore.
But what time would Rivali have been then?
Wasn't too early, no.
So then, of course, you dressed and washed and got your rice, and then during the morning you were in Singapore working. You must have found the work increasingly hard as your condition deteriorated.
Yes. Well, not only hard, but the heat of the day. I mean, if you go back to Singapore now and get out of that plane, the heat hits you. And I sometimes, when I got out of that plane just a few years ago, I thought to myself, how on earth did I work in this? We didn't only work on those barrows. Later on, we went on road building, and we were digging out the hillside to make a road.
Very, very heavy physical work.
Yes.
And if did they push you hard, or were they allowed to work at your own pace and rate?
Well, Musami and Saito and this chap, they were pretty good, except if they were annoyed at something, and then they were old soldiers, the three of them.
And if something annoyed them, what?
Oh, they had sticks. They would hit you with the sticks.
Well, you'd come through to a lunchtime break or dinner break and have your rice and the jippo.
Yeah.
And then it work through the afternoon.
Yes.
Presumably. And at the end of the working day, what time was that?
I wouldn't know, because I didn't have a watch, you see, and there were no clocks around. You worked more or less by the sun. When the sun went down, you knew it was time to go to bed, or just sit around talking.
And march back?
Yes.
Under your guards, of course. Yes, yes. And were you given a meal when you got back into the camp?
Yes, yes. That was your main meal at night time when you got back into the camp. And the cooks did their very best.
The British cooks?
Yes, which cook. What was available.
So what might you get?
Rice, tea and jippo. As I say, whatever was available went in this jippo. I once looked up in a dictionary the word jippo, and I found a dictionary and it said boiled water to which ingredients are added. And that was typical of anything that could go in the boiled water went in. Once we had fish, and our cook tried to make some fish duff, as he called it. And I was on duty helping to dish it out, and it was just like glue. We couldn't separate it from the ladle. But at least they were trying.
Did you have a cook of your own per hut, or did a cook serve a number of huts?
Well, the cook served a number of huts. You see, all of our, the men of our regiment, if there were 100 of us, we had our two cooks that were always with us. Sergeant Towell was our main cook. He died of cholera later on.
So after you'd had your meal, what would happen for the rest of the evening?
Well, as I said before, I was always in a church choir. I was always interested in acting and things like that. And so I joined with a group who decided that we would try to entertain the rest of them. I'd always had a banjo. Carried it ever since I joined the army. It was in Scotland with me, in Norfolk with me. It was on the ships with me. Of course, it went down on the ship, on the Empress of Asia. Well, not went down, but it was... So I missed that banjo, and I decided I would try to make one. And with equipment round about, I did. I pinched a crate from the Japanese hut. I took it to pieces. It had wire around it. The wire made the frets. We pinched a piece of Japanese telephone wire, and I found that I told you that I'd been on a signal course in Darlington, where we stripped the wire down, and we found that the Japanese wire was the same. So I made strings out of Japanese telephone wire. And we used to sit round at night, and I used to sing songs, and they used to join in with me. I eventually made a proper guitar.
Japanese never asked you how you'd got it?
Not then, no. At night time, in between having our meal and it turning really dark, we had no lights in the camp, of course, and men would wander around the camp just doing a little walk. And I used to have a constant stream of people coming through from various parts of the camp saying, how's your guitar getting on, and watching it being made. When are we going to hear it played? And then came the time when we did have a concert. And I wrote a little review. Before the war, you probably wouldn't know, there was a thing called the Happy Drome. And there was a fellow called Harry Corris and Enoch. And I wrote a review on that. And I changed the words of, we three, we're not alone. We're a perfect company. And I changed it to Joe Starlin, Winston Churchill and me. And we did a show on that.
What time would lights out be?
Well, there's no lights out.
No lights out. What time?
When the sun went down, round about probably about 6-7 o'clock at night.
Did the Japanese exert a sleep, in the words, into barracks?
Well, they wandered round to see that everything was quiet. The sentries wandered round.
And it's just, basically, you were living a very natural existence. When the sun came up, you were up, and when the sun went down,
we just retired, talked, sang together. We're just talking the other day. There's one lad, friend of mine, another friend of mine, Bombardier Clish. He later went into films in Canada. Now, he was very interested in films and radio, and he remembered a play called The Snatch. And what we did, we got a piece of cardboard with a hole in the middle, and we pretended that was a radio, and we got behind and we shouted our parts through that while the men looked at this piece of cardboard and listened to our radio play.
It's everything, isn't it? No matter how small it is, to keep your spirits up and use things in that way. You'd obviously get into the routine of turning bits and pieces into all kinds of useful utensils and things. What kind of thing were you doing?
Well, people were making their own cups that didn't have a cup. You got an old milk tin or an old McConaughey's tin, and the lid, you bent it back, put a piece of stick in there and bent that lid over that, and you had a ladle or a cup, you see. Most people had that. A tin, if you could get some grease and a piece of string, you put the grease in the tin, and then you lit the piece of string and you had a little light for night time. We were all being eaten alive with bugs, and I made a little bed, like an Indian charpoy's bed, collected tin lids, and put some creosote in those so that my bed would stand inside the creosote to stop the bugs climbing in. Of course, that didn't deter them. They dropped from the roof.
And that must have been difficult to live with, presumably.
Yes. What with bugs and lice and bullfrogs and the smell from the canal.
And were mosquitoes prevalent? Water around, hadn't
you? Not very much, because they were getting to grips with malaria, and men, mainly Tamil men, with a canister on their backs, would go around spraying any water that was around Singapore to kill off any mosquito or larva.
Presumably that was to help the Japanese as much as yourselves.
It was good. But you see, that had been going on under British rule for years, and it just continued.
Is there anything else during the what we'd call a usual day that occurred and or you were involved in?
Funny thing. Well, the jester, Conlon, and the funny chap, Carney, they came up to me one day and they said, would you like to get out of the camp? I said, of course I would. They said, well, we've got this piece of paper, said we can collect firewood for the Japanese cookhouse. Go and get a barrel. Well, I didn't realise at the time, but it wasn't pukka. And I went and pinched a Japanese barrel from the Japanese quarters. And we went to the barbed wire gate and showed him this piece of paper. And whether he could read English or not, he let us out of the camp because we kept saying, Shuijibar, Nippon Shuijibar, which I think was Japanese cookhouse. And he let us out and we went to a factory which was called Fogden Brisbane. Now, I don't know whether it was Fogden's from Brisbane in Australia or Fogden Brisbane was the factory. And there was the kind of factory that I'd worked in as an apprentice. They had circular saws, playing and machines. And we collected the wood from that, put it on the barrel, but left a space in the middle, and then we called in any Chinese shops that would sell us something cheap that we could take back into camp. Put that in the middle, cover it up, and get it back into the camp.